An interview with George H. Magruder at 3107 Lama Avenue, Long Beach, California. The date is March 2nd, 1983, and the interviewer is Ann Andres.
Were you born in Long Beach, George?
Yes, I was. I was the 303rd kid born in Long Beach, way on the outskirts of Long Beach, actually outside of the city limits. I was born at 8 and 835 Chestnut. And it was a terrific Santa Ana day at that time. The wind was blowing, and then they had to send for a midwife to help my mother out, and I guess they saved my life. The umbilical cord separated. And anyway, I made it. And my early days, as I say, I can't remember too much about my real early days, but from about 6 years old, I can remember. And I know my first job was filling sandbags. I got 25 cents for 4 hours' work, which was good money at that time. And they piled them all along the ocean front on the front of the stairs on the pike to keep the water from coming in. Then a little later, my first fishing trip was out on the old Pine Avenue Pier, which I was 6 years old, and I happened to hook into a yellowtail that took me all around the end of the pier. And finally some of the old-timers out there helped me get it in, and that was the biggest day of my life at that time.
How old were you when you were filling the sandbags?
About six and a half. And the tides are just like they are right now. The water was coming clear up, splashing on the fronts of the buildings, and there was a few places on the south side of the pike, the old Japanese pagoda and the bamboo slide and the theater restaurants, but the beach area is right out. You could walk from the pike where the outlet of the road plunged. You could walk right out within 60 feet of the old wooden pike at that time, of the boardwalk, and you were in the water. And then a little later, when I got to be older, I used to surf body into the where the cyclone racer. On the Silver Spray Pier, we'd dive off of that about midway, and which was 20-25 foot of water. And then we would catch the breakers and ride in what they call belly surfing, right into the shoreline, which was, as I say, 50-60 feet from the pike. And I remember one time on a Thanksgiving, there was a group of us had the old type of well, it's not like a surfboard now, but it was the air mattress, so to speak. And we went out to the roadstead where the Saratoga and the Lexington was anchored. And it was an afternoon of Thanksgiving. And I guess at that time the Navy didn't keep any food over. But I remember they were tossing over remnants of the Thanksgiving dinner. And a couple of kids dove down and got a third of a ham. And one kid got a half of a turkey. And I couldn't dive deep enough to get any of them. But I shared it with them anyway.
Was there a Navy base? I mean, was there a naval station, as we know it now, at that time?
I don't recall it like a shipyard or anything like that, but the Navy did come in, and we had lots and lots of Navy ships in here, the battleships and all, and the roadstead out there, which was, I guess, it was only about a quarter of a mile off of the beachfront at that time. I can't remember exactly.
Yeah.
But I know it was deep. And we used to ride to get the boat from Pine Avenue Pier and ride over to San Pedro on an excursion type. And I think I was 3 years old when my mother and father and five other couples got a rowboat. Now, this is something that if you don't hear, it'll come up. And they rowed from Long Beach to Catalina.
Oh, my word.
And I think I was 2 years old at that time, two or three, I'm not sure which. But I remember them telling me about it.
You didn't go along for the ride.
I was along for the ride, yeah. That was my first experience on the ocean.
Well, when did your family come to Long Beach?
In 1912, in the year I was born, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
They arrived in...
When did they come?
My dad had the opportunity to open up a candy store on the pike. So he and his brother came out, and they opened a store, which they kept until... I think it was 1930, something like that.
What kind of business?
They had candy.
They had candy?
Yeah,
before.
They were in confectionery business back in Parsons, Kansas. They had ice cream and a bakery, and a big candy store. They used to make all kinds of ice cream and everything, bakery goods. But then my dad went to Mantle Springs, Colorado in 1909, and he opened up a little candy store at Mantle Springs, which was a saltwater spa. And their store was 12 by 15, and they used to make the candy in there, and then they'd pull it by hand on a hook that they fastened on the wall, and then they'd hand wrap it. And I think at the present time that my dad was the originator of saltwater taffy, of the trade name of saltwater taffy. Mm. And the reason why I say this is because in 1909, he was making candy in the window, and a couple came by with a little boy. And I guess the little fellow had his, expression of salt, everything with the salt there, up to his neck, and he couldn't take any more, and he looked in the window as my dad was making, and he said, "And I suppose that's called saltwater taffy." Well, my dad grabbed onto it immediately and made a big sign, "Special today only, Manitou Springs saltwater taffy." Well, that was in 1909. And in 1912, James Brothers were in Los Angeles, and they had a candy store, and they were going under. So they flipped the coin to see whether they'd go to San Francisco or back to Atlantic City, and Atlantic City won, and this was in 1912. Well, they went back and established, which they were a multi-million dollar concern back there, and they claimed they originated saltwater taffy due to the fact that the Atlantic Ocean, a storm washed up a bunch of the saltwater foam on the stand, and when they opened up the next morning, there was a salty foam on the candy, so they thought they'd call it saltwater taffy. But we still think we were the originators.
I like your version better.
Well, I think records would prove it, so we've never gone into that.
Mm. So your father and your uncle worked together in the business.
Yes, and then in 1918, my dad opened up a big manufacturing place in Seal Beach called the B&M Candy Company.
Oh.
And he was making very high-grade, hard candy, and the five big candy companies in L.A. and the surrounding area got together, and because he was making such high quality that it was hurting their business. So they got together and they forced the prices down so much that my dad just couldn't quite make it. And then he had a crooked partner that fleeced him out of about $15,000 to $20,000 on an order that wasn't existent, and my dad had to throw it up. But it took him 9 years. Instead of taking bankruptcy, he took 9 years, and he finally paid off all of the debts that he had.
Mm-hmm.
His business is defunct now, but it was a pretty good-sized factory right on the beachfront in Seal Beach, which is, I think it was finally a tango game, and then I don't know what's up to it now.
Hmm. So, did you work in the business when you were growing up?
Yes. And after that, when my dad went in, he went into Pinner House on Pine Avenue and was making candy there, and I used to have to make candy canes and a few odds and ends. And never forget the time he had a barrel, a 52-gallon barrel of Coca-Cola syrup. And he asked me to siphon off some of the syrup so they could put it in the fountain. And I siphoned it off, but I drank enough of it that I was sick for about a week. And speaking of Coca-Cola, when my dad was in Parsons, Kansas, they had an opportunity to buy Coca-Cola stock for 5 cents a share. That was the original offer of public stock for 5 cents a share. And he said, "I can't see it. I don't think it's going to be a success."
Did your mother work in the business?
Yes, she was a chocolate dipper.
Uh-huh.
Very good at it. She could make all kinds of letters, designs, and emblems and everything on top of a very small chocolate.
So all this time, while he was making candy, somebody was still having the store down in the park.
Well, yes. See, he had the store, and he sold out to Bill Leniker. Uh-huh. And Leniker sold out of coffee, and they had it until, I think it was 1932, 31. And then my dad bought it back again.
Oh, I see.
And then that's where we started in life. Had a little store in Balboa, and Levine and I were married, and then I came back and went on the fire department.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And I was there until my dad had a nervous breakdown and a stroke, and I got permission to go back into the business from the chief, and And I've been in it ever since.
What was the fire department like?
Very good. I enjoyed it a great deal. I liked the excitement.
What years were
those?
What time was that?
I went on in 1939 and I left in 1945.
So during the war years?
I was on the fire department, yeah.
And then also maybe some oil well fires?
Oh, yes. We had the big dock fire down at 7th Street where we worked for 72 hours with only about 3 hours sleep, and I was sent to the hospital with burns on my face and hands. For about 3 or 4 hours and then right back down again. And the salvation that I can think of down there, what kept us going, was the terrific job that the Salvation Army and the Red Cross did with the aid of the Bohemian Distributing Company. So one of them would furnish us sandwiches, the other one furnished us a big cup of hot coffee, and the Bohemian would put a big ration of strong rum in it. And that way we could get rid of we could vomit that up or regurgitate the creosote that we'd inhaled and swallowed from the dock fire, because the whole pier and everything was on fire, and that creosote got into our lungs and all. But of course, a little bit of it wore off too, so we weren't feeling too bad, but we got the fire out, and they had big 500-pound bombs in cases all through the area that were on fire. And the one thing that I can remember very vividly was Chief Sandeman. He was just recently made chief. And Captain Watkins and I went in on the bill. I was number one hose man, and I was dragging the hose, and they were directing me where to put the fire. And the chief says, "Don't worry, George." He says, "If the bombs go off, you'll never know it anyway, so there's no problem." Well, I went back to do something back at the rig, and when I understood that the Chief Sandeman, the pier had broken through, burnt through, and he dropped down and was stuck on one of the piling with his quick hitch, and the fellows got him out okay. That was my understanding. I never did see it, but I heard that. Mm-hmm. And as I say, I was there from Station 10 for 72 hours.
Wow, so Station 10 is where?
That's at 14th and Peterson. It used to be the alarm office and the shop and the engine company there, but it's moved out now.
Did you have to take any special tests and training to get in the fire department?
Oh, yes.
How did you get your training?
Well, I took the examination. There was, I think, 2,600 people, both for the fire and the police at that time, and we had a physical and written and oral, and my grade was, I think I was the 50th, 40th or 50th, something like that, on the list. So I went on the fire department 2 days after the other day, and was stationed at Station 10 for all that time, with the exception of going out on a few stations here and a few stations there on the reefs and stuff, mm-hmm. which I enjoyed it very much.
I suppose you ought to get back to
growing up. You told me some good stories about growing up in Long Beach. What it was like, where you the kind of things you did as a boy, talking about the area called the Willows.
Mm-hmm.
That, yes, that the Willows is borderlining on where Las Rutas and the hill, Las Rutas School, on down clear to the flood control, which is not cemented in like it is now. And the high water used to back up clear to Long Beach Boulevard, and from Willow, which they called it Willows because it was a little dirt road going down in through the Willows on both sides of the road, and then when the water would come in, that would flood up. And we used to go down in there with several kids from Burnie Up, and we'd trap raccoons and possum and skunks, and we'd skin them out and sell the pellets. And then where the Memorial Hospital is now, what they used to call that, the Frog Pond.
Mm-hmm.
And that was a lot of carp. We had a lot of carp in there. And we'd go out there and we had rafts, and we'd pull around in the area and shoot these carp with bow and arrows with a cord fastened to the arrow, and then drag them in and take them home and plant them in the rose gardens.
As a fertilizer?
As a fertilizer, and we cut it up. And my mother raised carnations. We had a pretty good size lot, and she raised carnations. And every year at Memorial Day and Mother's Day and Easter, I would take two or three wagon loads of carnations up to the cemetery there on Spring, I think it is, and Orange, and would stand out in front and sell them for 15, I don't remember now, 15, 20 cents a dozen. And I remember one year coming back with $22, which both my mother and father combined was only making $18. And I did this for two or three years. And then one year I can't remember whether they were Japanese or who they were, but a great big van pulled up, a big flatbed truck of flowers, and they started in. And I think that was the start of the outside or the little flower shops that stuck all around. But I know it used to be pretty good there for the three different holidays.
Where are you living
then? We were living at 20th and Lewis. And when my dad built in 1925, it cost him $2,500 to build this real nice California-style home, which was, I think, five-room house, two or three bedrooms, I don't remember just exactly. I think my sister and I each had a separate room. And we could stand on the back porch and see Powell High School with nothing in between. A few trees, and that was it. There were all Japanese gardens around us. And the old California Avenue was where the PE train went down. I used to catch that and jump on the back and ride over to Terminal Island when I was working in the fish canyon over there. And ride back. And I remember at Hill Street where the trestle was across the Hoot Gibson and Tom Mix movies. They'd ride the top of the boxcars and all and jump off on their horse and all. I used to stand around and watch them. It's quite interesting to watch
it. The Balboa Studio, did that work?
I think that was the Long Beach Studio in Balboa. I think they had a contract with them on that. Okay. I remember the theaters down on the pike that they had, and at the Rialto, when my folks had the candy store there, and my mother would want to find me, she'd always go into the first row on the left-hand side at the Rialto, and I'd be sitting there watching the picture. And then they had the James brothers and the Dalton brothers, so I don't know whether they were actually the mummified remains or not, but they'd have a coffin there with big signs, this is Jesse James and so on. And I think we paid 5 cents, 10 cents to get in and see the picture, and they had these mummies there. As I said, I can't blame them whether they were actually the true corpse or not, but anyway, we thought they were.
So that's down at the
fire. Yes, and then my folks moved to Santa Fe, New Mexico, when I was about 9. And I used to visit the old Adobe where Billy the Kid was killed, and they still had the pop marks in the walls where the bullets had hit. And they had a big candy store there. My dad was helping his brother for about 6 months while I lived there. Then he moved back to Long Beach, and then that's when he built the house out on 20th and Lewis.
What schools did you go to in Long Beach?
Well, I went to Burnett, and then I went to Roosevelt for one this semester, and then the first year that Hamilton Junior High started, I was in that, and then Powell High, and then City College.
Mm-hmm. You also mentioned something about playing up on Signal Hill
in
the gravel.
Oh, yeah, the old Graham gravel pit used to be up there, and we'd get a big sheet of sheet metal, or we didn't have plastic in those days, but we'd get a piece of sheet metal or a real piece of slick wood, and we'd slide down this thing, and then we built some wagons, and we'd come riding down the road to Cherry, and bust across Cherry, which I wouldn't recommend any kid now because he'd get killed, but we'd ride that clear down Cherry, clear down to the Pacific Coast Highway, and it was pretty fast. And then, as I remember, the first oil well that came in on top of Signal Hill, we stayed up all night.
The one in 1921?
Yes, I think that was, I forget the name of it. And then I worked as a helper on a spudding deal on the old Kennebec that was on Orange and Cerritos, I believe it was. When I was a little kid, I used to bring in the different parts of piers and stuff that they needed. And they'd give you maybe 50 cents or something, but It was quite interesting, yeah.
I've heard all these stories of people who lived around the oil wells and how all the way once close to they'd climb up to get it.
Yeah. Yeah, that was quite a deal, just to climb up and you could see for miles.
So the workmen were really nice about the hanging
out? Oh, yeah, they didn't mind. They didn't mind. I don't think there was any of this idea of security and insurances and everything at that time, but they didn't pay any much attention to us. In fact, the house where I live now, that the lot was, they had oil wells on that, and they had, in fact, underneath my yard, every once in a while I have to, when I dig down, I find cement slabs and bricks and stuff where they covered it over, which was the, probably the basis of some of the old boilers I know the neighbor 3 doors north, and he had a big sump hole in his place. And
that's your house
on Bixby, yes.
Well, later I'll show you an oil map. I've got an oil map, and you might want to look at it because you can probably figure out just who had the oil lease right there on the
Well, I know we signed an oil lease, but it didn't mount anything.
Oh, you did?
Yeah. Oh. Yeah, I think the oil was standard, but they decided they couldn't. They drilled one well, and they didn't do any good, so they canceled it all.
Well, another thing you told me that was that there was a gun club around where Douglas is now.
Yes, I was used to ride a bicycle, and 5 or 6 of us would go out there, and the club was a Montana Land Company.
Yeah.
And one of the guys, we took turns. One of the guys would go down to one end of the gun club and shoot 2 or 3 times, and the fellow that was caretaker would get on his horse and come tearing out there to stop him, and we'd all bust him on the other side and shoot 4 or 5 ducks and grab them and get on our bicycles and ride to a certain point that was out in the fence where we could get through, and he couldn't get through it. So we did that for several seasons until finally he got to knowing us, and he'd let us come in and shoot when the other guys weren't there. And Will J. Reed was, I believe he was connected with that, but I know a little later he had the Cerritos out on where the Lakewood the Country Club is now.
Uh-huh, that was the
Cerritos. Yeah, and I used to go out there and hunt on the north side of it and also on the south side, which where Douglas is now. And then I hunted down at Seal Beach. I mean, well, it's actually where Huntington Harbor is now. Back in the sleeves back in there.
Have you ever heard of the Farmer's Gun Club?
Oh, yes.
Where is that?
Well, that was in the area where the Cerritos and the Westminster and the Blue Wing and all were.
Wait a minute, you're giving me a lot of names. Now, the
West Minister... Well, there was about 15 or 16, if I remember, 15 or 16 gun clubs in that area from the old, from Coast Highway up to, I guess it was clear up to where Leisure World and all in that area, all around there, and then Rossmore.
Uh-huh.
There was all gun clubs clear back up into there. And of course, most of them were all private, and you couldn't get into any of them, but you could get on the 7th Street and down on the Coast Highway. We could hunt off of that.
So tell me again, tell me some of the names again of
the Coast Highway. Well, there was a Blue Wing, the Westminster, the Sprig Club, and I don't know, as I say, those are the ones that I was mostly...
We're interested in, because we came across some literature, J.E. Hatch, who was
the security guard. Yeah, he was the vice president.
Yes, and his father, P.E. Hatch, but we've got some of the papers the Hatch papers we got through the bank and the university right now.
Mm-hmm.
And there were references to the Farmer's Gun Club in there. And then we saw something from Missing Sporting Goods selling shells to the Farmer's Gun Club, but we didn't know where it was.
Well, I can't really say where the farmers was, but I do remember that Mr. Hatch approached my father to buy in a membership in the Bolsa Chica Gun Club for $1,000.
Mm-hmm.
And my dad was, as I say, he had the little candy store down on the pike. And he said, gosh, I can't see how I could spend $1,000. And he said, well, you'd be a partner in the land. You'd own some of the land. And he said, well, what would I do if we're out there? He says, I can't even, I'd have to ride a bicycle to and from because I don't have a car. So anyway, incidentally, he passed it up, and then I guess the last time I heard that the membership sold in that was something like $75,000, and they were all millionaires from the oil and all. And another thing that my dad had an opportunity to buy at 5 acres at Orange on Spring Street on the southwest, the southeast corner for 5 acres, and a Japanese farmer had a house and a barn, 500 or 600 chickens, and a little garden. And he wanted $500 for the whole thing. And this was right after my dad had opened up the candy store. I don't know just what year it was, but he said, no, he'd have to either get a horse or a bicycle to get down to work, and he had no way of getting there. So he didn't buy it. Anyway, several years later, the Love Lady Pool was developed.
Love Lady
Pool was the same area, and the first year we heard that they took out $12 million net out of that 5 acres. I go by it now and see some of them, the wells still, I mean, the pumps still working on it. But there's another deal, five acres for $500.
So your family never made any money?
Never, not. They were always on the outskirts, always on the outskirts of it, yeah. Yep, that's life.
Yeah, $500 is a lot of money at that time.
Yeah, yes, it was. Because when Lydia and I were married in 1935, I was making 26 cents an hour, or 23 cents an hour, and I got married, I got a 3 cent an hour raise. And she was working for the telephone company and making $12 a week. And we lived in L.A. for a year in a real nice little motel. I mean, not a motel, but a court. For $23 a month, it furnished, everything was furnished, everything but the telephone, the lights, gas, water, a garage, all your linens, cooking utensils, and everything for $23 a month. Everything but your telephone bill. And I was driving tin from Los Angeles to Long Beach for 11 cents a gallon for gasoline. And we still, we had more money to spend, the two of us, than we'd had any other time of our life.
When did you come back to Long Beach then? When did you settle?
Well, we moved from L.A. back down to Balboa. We lived in Balboa for 3 years, 4 years. And then I moved back to Long Beach when my son was born. And we lived there, and then my two daughters were born here. And
was she born from Long Beach?
She was born in Spokane. But she lived out here from time. She was about 6, 7 years old.
What did her father do?
Her father was an artist. He painted murals and landscape on redwood burrows and redwood deals down on the pike. And then he moved up to Scotia, Northern California. And then they separated, and her stepfather was a fireman. That's how I got on the fire department. I figured when I married Ladine, her stepfather was making $170 a month. And I thought, man, I'm marrying into a rich family. Because my family was lucky if they made $60 a month.
How about the depression? Did that really hit your family?
Well, we managed to eat. We had beans most of the time. And once in a while, we'd... of course, this is when I was a kid growing up. I did a lot of lawn work and things like that to help out, which didn't. And then when Nadine and I were married, we had the little store in Balboa, and I would drive back and forth to work in Long Beach, and she was working at a game, one of the games down there.
Mm-hmm.
And we were paying $30 a month for a real beautiful apartment building. And I mean a building, it was, we took care of the whole thing because they turned it over to us in the end of September, and we stayed until the 1st of June for, I think it was $16 a month, and then we got a portion of it for $30 a month, and we were there to keep the fire insurance and all legal on it. But I remember one incident that we had eating hamburger and pork and beans and bread for about a week and a half, and that's all we could eat, that's all we had. I wasn't what fish I could catch when I had time. I came home one evening from Long Beach, and Ladine had the candles on the table, and she had on a real fancy gown, and we were going to have our evening meal under candlelight and all. And as I walked in the door, I looked, and she was making hamburgers, and I said, "What the heck, hamburgers again?" And the next thing I knew, I had 2 pounds of hamburger hit me right square in the face, and down I went on the floor. And we got to laughing so much about it. But boy, she hauled off and let me have it. But But that was right. It was our main deal. I didn't remember when she got a boarding house job, and we moved in that, and she did the cooking, and she didn't know how to cook. So she'd call her mother on the phone, and her mother or my mother would give her a menu for the day. We got her bed union, and in about a month, she got to be real good at cooking. So we had about 30 people that she was cooking for. And she got to be a very good cook. Through necessity.
Yeah. Something you have to learn.
Yeah.